The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. It's the show featuring Gogo the Chimp.
Nothing like a chimp to liven up a radio show.
Easy there, Gogo. Gogo, no. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to the most exciting show on this or any other planet. Albin, Chris, are you buckled in? Because what we have today is so crazy that a lot of people are going to get lost. Where do we start? Okay, first of all, In hour one today, I'm talking to Jim Caviezel. He played Jesus in Passion of the Christ. He said he's going to come on in full makeup. I don't believe it because he's a big joker. But I'm talking to Jim Caviezel. He's got a new film out called Infidel. It's kind of a lighthearted family comedy starring, I guess, Barbara Streisand is kind of like the maven. She plays
Goldie
type.
Hawn. Goldie Hawn's in it, I think.
Goldie Hawn. It's just a kooky romp through the 70s sexcapades kind of thing. And we're gonna have some fun with that. It is directed by Warren Beatty, and that's Infidel with Jim Caviezel. Any second, we're gonna have Jim Caviezel on this program, and we'll see.
It's full of disco, right? I believe it's full of disco music.
It's basically an homage to the disco era. And I know that there's like cameos by everybody you can think of. Gloria Gaynor, you know, it's just a big Thelma Houston. You know, it's an homage to that era.
Yeah, it's like
it's
a film.
Crazy.
It's a film version of Laughing, basically.
Right. And Chero plays the judge at the end. Chero plays the judge.
I love her.
And she says to the Bailey, coochie coochie, to the bailiff, coochie coochie. And, you know, it's just for people of that era, it's crazy. So, but that's Jim Caviezel coming up in a couple of seconds. In hour two now, we don't know, but we're trying to get Bill O'Reilly. He's a cranky, scary, tall Irishman with a temper that you don't want to tick him off. So we're going to try to get Bill O'Reilly in hour two. If we fail, he took a swing at somebody. I don't know what to tell you, but he's a big, scary guy. Bill O'Reilly in hour two. He's got a new book out called Killing Time, I think, right? Is that it?
Yeah, killing somebody, killing everybody.
I think it's called Killing Time. And anyway, so we had to mention that up front. Now, I've got to talk about a couple of more serious things. People often ask me, hey, what's life like in New York? What's life like in New York? Now, you guys are a little bit more out of the city, yeah. But I'm just going to say that, you know, I don't see much of a difference. Until yesterday, I spoke to my current wife, Sweetie Pie, and she said that she went into a cosmetic store in our neighborhood. This is true. And the door to get in was locked, like, right? And she said to them, why do you lock the door? I mean, what's it? And, you know, they have to buzz you in, and that had never happened before. And she says, you haven't had any problems, have you? And they said, oh, yeah. Now, this is a very nice neighborhood. They said, people have just come in, grabbed stuff, like a ton of stuff, and stolen it and run out. Like never, ever happened before. So the point is, these mayors, like de Blasio, have effectively given permission for what they would think of as social redistribution. Like, tough luck. These companies can afford it. They've got insurance. We're not going to prosecute. We're not going to have, you know, cash for bail. We're just going to let it ride. And the thing is, you don't believe this until you hear a story like what Suzanne told me yesterday. The idea that in a nice neighborhood, in a nice store, they are scared because these are young women running this store, right? They're selling cosmetics to other women and, you know, moisturizers and that kind of thing. It's like some high end, or it's not that high end. It's kind of like, you know, a middle brand store in a nice neighborhood, and they are having to deal with this. And so I say this because we need to understand that if you are not seeing this in your neighborhood, wherever you live, maybe you live on a farm, maybe the fact of the matter is many Americans are seeing things like this. I keep hearing stories. I've heard horror stories from the Upper West Side, which was communist to begin with. It is stunning that we're seeing the working out of the worldview of the radical left wing of what used to be the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party has left Democrats. If you once were a Democrat, I don't know what you do right now. I would hope that you'd understand that this has, you know, it's kind of like when the cat's out of the bag and you see, wow, I had no idea that we could ever go there. But I keep hearing stories like this. And I just want to say that, you know, particularly when you have a wife or kids, you think, my goodness, what if they ran afoul of one of these thugs or one of these maniacs who is just wandering around knowing that the odds that there's going to be a cop who will do anything is like zero. That's the wild, wild west. That's anarchy. And that's basically what the radical left is allowing to happen. And I just want to say that we have a strict choice here. It's not, people often say, well, I don't like Trump. I don't care if you hate Trump. Forget about Trump. The people that he appoints are people who will stand against this kind of thing. Your senator, your congressman, if we do not stand against what has happened to the Democratic Party will be over. It'll be over. There will be no Democratic Party if they continue in this direction. In fact, they don't even have to continue. If they stay where they are now, eventually people are going to see this kind of thing and they're not going to, you know, there's just no way. Once it comes home to you and once it threatens your family, you're not going to go for it. But I want to say to people, please understand how bad it is. If I am getting anywhere near anything like this, imagine people living in poor parts of the boroughs in New York City, what they're going through day in and day out. It's not right. The poor always suffer when government doesn't do its job. That's just a fact. Government is ordained by God. Tomorrow we're going to have Pastor John MacArthur on this program, and he's going to talk about the role of government from a biblical worldview. What is the role of government? So it's really important. And of course, I can't help but think of Bonhoeffer because the book that I wrote about him, you know, changed my way of thinking dramatically, and it made me realize that we don't ask to face this kind of thing. History can sometimes come to us, and right now, everybody in this country, whether they like it or not, is facing a choice. And we know the statement that Bonhoeffer was supposed to have made, no one, including me, was ever able to track it down. So I can now take credit for it. If you want to know, if you don't want to falsely attribute it to Bonhoeffer, I give you permission to falsely attribute it to me, Eric Metaxas. But it's silence in the face of evil is itself evil. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. God will not hold us guiltless. In other words, if you don't do something, do what you can, vote for the candidate who will do the most to counter this sort of thing, then it is on you. There is no third option. There's no pure David French third option where I'm gonna sit this one out, because in the end, what happens, you'll have to share in that guilt. And so silence in the face of evil is itself evil means that the millions of evangelical Christians who are not registered to vote, you better get busy, folks. You better get busy and understand that biblically you are on the hook for whatever happens if you don't vote. If you don't do the minimum, this is called the minimum, and vote. And take this seriously and stop using the band-aid of bad theology You are, God will not hold you guiltless. We're all responsible for our actions, for our mature adult actions, and doing nothing is doing something. So I just thought I better say that. When we come back, it's going to get crazy up in here with Jim Caviezel. You won't believe it. Stick around.
Martin Luther, chillin' down. Uncle Ernie, Uncle Ian, open the door.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, I think I've told you, you've watched a number of movies about Jesus. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if we could get the star of one of those films on this program? And I've been telling all my friends, Max von Sydow is going to be on the program. And my producers told me he just passed away. And I got to be honest with you. That makes me very angry because I was looking forward to Max von Sydow. I really wanted to talk to him about the Seventh Seal, working with Bergman, all of that. Now you might as well throw it in the garbage. So I said, what else we got, guys? And they said, we think we can get Caviezel. I said, look, I know Jim Caviezel. We've talked before. I always love to talk to him, but he's famously serious, you know, like he won't joke or whatever. And we joke around a lot on this program. And they said, look, Eric, that's all we can do. So, ladies and gentlemen, my friend Jim Caviezel.
This is my first comedy.
Jim, let me just tell you that I appreciate your coming on and stepping in for Max von Sydow. This could be your big break, like when Leonard Bernstein was called up at age 25 to the lectern. You are known to just about everybody who is following this program. So that's why I feel like I can joke around. People already know who you are, but let's, in case there are a couple of people who don't know, listening on the radio, you play Jesus in Passion of the Christ. It seems like yesterday. What year was that?
Well, we started filming in 2002. It came out in 2004.
Unbelievable. And I can see you're still wearing the makeup all these years later.
Well, we're doing Resurrection pretty soon.
You're doing a sequel called Resurrection?
Passion of the Christ, the Resurrection. Yeah, Randy Wallace and Mel Gibson are writing it right now.
It is a couple of real hacks. I know them both. Gosh. All right, listen. have you ever thought about retitling it, instead of Resurrection, Passion of the Christ 2, Electric Boogaloo? Have you thought about that?
I thought a little bit about maybe Jesus Comes Back for Seconds or something like that. Yeah, part two, yeah.
Part three would be Jesus Returns, and man, is he ticked.
Yeah,
that would be it. But honestly, I've heard for two decades, I've heard about a possible sequel, but you're telling me that that is in fact being written by Randall Wallace and Mel Gibson.
Yes.
And what are they on, like on a third draft now?
Oh, good guess. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, I've got inside information.
Okay.
Mel is sleeping in my guest room here.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. He like when we're working on a project, we like to be together and just hang. So listen, I feel like my greatest accomplishment in life up to this point is getting you to laugh more than once in 10 minutes.
They just they always edit it out.
It was edited.
Five times they've done this.
Are you seated in your own theater room there? Is that what that is?
No, this is a friend of mine's place.
A friend of yours.
Yeah.
But your friend won't come on camera and reveal their identity.
No, he's smaller than me.
Okay. We're here to talk about a new film you have in which you don't play Jesus, which is, it's a little shocking. So that film's coming out this weekend, which is actually why I'm really excited to get you here. The film is called Infidel. Tell us, Jim, if you would, what is the plot of this film coming out this weekend?
Well, after you play first, if you play Jesus, you get very similar offers. right? Very safe for them. When I used to go, just to give you an idea of what the first thing that I ever did was a Neil Simon play. So I was pretty well trained. But this film, I looked at it, Cyrus Norstad, him and I did the Stoning of Soraya M together. I came into contact with him when the Passion of the Christ producer and Braveheart, Mel Gibson was a producer, but the other one, Steve McAvity, came to me and one of their stars fell out. So I had to learn Farsi for this film.
Hold on.
Yeah. That was a stunt.
Learn Farsi for this film. See, that would be a deal breaker for me. And I have no credibility in Hollywood, but I would just be like, I'm out. You actually had to learn some Farsi. That is astounding to me. That's
this
amazing.
In this film. Okay. And so in the last one, I spoke with all completely, mostly. Yeah. I think all Farsi. And then this one, some, there'll be a couple versions. There'll be ones that is done for the Persian area in Iran. But this one, I've read the script. I called the director up and I said that he came to me originally for a smaller part. Cyrus did. I said, why don't you offer me the lead? And he said, well, I didn't think you'd do it. And I said, well, let's go talk about it. So we met and it's the story is the plot line is you have a character who's a college Christian professor, theologian kind of guy, who gets invited to speak in Saudi Arabia at a conference on details of Jesus and things. And his wife, you know, tells him not to do it. And it's very dangerous. Especially because the narrative doesn't fit the public, you know, narrative now, and the governments both in Iran and the United States, actually. And so he goes and he's kidnapped. Then at that point, it's pretty much, deny Jesus is God or die.
Okay. Now, the reason you did this, it seems to me, it's not a true story, but it might as well be, because this is happening all the time in the Middle East. We talk about that on this program as much as we can. The horror of the truly wicked persecution of Christians around the world is something that the mainstream media in America essentially ignores. Even the conservative media virtually ignores it. Once in a while, when somebody like you does a movie on it, they may deal with it. But this is epidemic. I mean, this is the worst persecution we've seen in 2,000 years, roughly, unless you want to talk about the Soviet Union. But it's grotesque what is happening around the world. So congrats to you and Cyrus for helping the world understand what is going on. This is I assume it's kind of a hard movie to watch. This is not a kid's film.
No, it's not. No. Are there light moments in it where you laugh your head off? Yes. Because that's just how life is at times. But, you know, it's generally quite, I mean, in the 21st century, that Christian, barbaric Christian persecution is still going on, also in China. And there are a lot of collaborators that are involved, that people that have found their heaven on this earth that sell out people of faith. And, you know, this doesn't, you know, there are, let me be very clear that when we did this film, Cyrus Norstad, when I first did the Stoning of Soraya M with him, he was Muslim and he had a conversion, but his family's all Muslim and he grew up in Iran. And he's told me, he says, don't be worried about offending Muslims. He said, I know that sounds callous at first glance, but while the rest of the world is pandering to Muslim extremists, the real victims are Muslims, the ones who aren't extreme, the ones who want peace.
Correct.
They're the people group most oppressed by Islamic regimes such as Iran. You're not hurting Muslims by taking a stand against radicals. You're actually helping them.
Right.
And in this film, you will see Muslims helping Christians. It's bizarre when you see it, and you'll actually see Jews helping Christians and vice versa. You know, for a long time, Israel, Palestine, whatever, the whole area used to be a peaceful area for many, many, many years. Christians, Muslims, Jews, they lived next to each other. If there was ever a war, there should be a war against secular extremists. Now, this is a war that needs to be fought and must be won. Look what's happening in the United States right now. We're being marginalized. We can't even go to church right now. They talk about COVID-19. Look at all the people that are committing suicide. I have a friend who's lost 7 SEAL buddies who have committed suicide because they can't go to church. Okay, well, it might be bad to go to church. Then why are we on airplanes and you see cloths over their face, literally bumping shoulders?
We are on the same page.
You can't go to a church. You can't go to church where you're next to each other. This is crazy.
We are right now, we're going through a horrific period. We're going to go to a break, but I'm thrilled, folks, as you would guess, to be talking to Jim Caviezel, the new film. Boy, do I hope you check it out. It is called Infidel, all across the nation, opening this weekend. Please check it out. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I get to have fun. I get to joke around with Jim Caviezel, and I get to be serious with Jim Caviezel about an issue that's so serious that I think I got to joke around sometimes up front because I can't even bear it. But we're talking about a new film opening in theaters this weekend. I beg you, folks, these films need to be supported. It is called Infidel. It is worth your time and your money. Jim Caviezel, how many... theaters do we know that this will be opening in this weekend, roughly?
Okay, last number I heard was either, I think, 1,588 or 1,488, somewhere in there.
That's huge. That's huge. For a film like this, that is huge. That means that virtually anybody can go see it. And I just hope that they will. So keep talking about this. I mean, this is a passion for you. You're very serious about your faith. And you understand that around the world today, there are people being horrifically persecuted for their faith, whether it's North Korea or China or the Middle East. It's monstrous. What is the actual plot of this film? You said that this person goes to the Middle East to give to do a conference.
Yeah.
Who grabs him and what happens?
Well, he's in the conference and they're talking to him about, yes, Jesus is Jesus as a prophet. Okay. But now he has to make a decision whether to go along with that or speak the truth and be bold about it. And he chooses the latter. And, you know, but we didn't just bring this up out of thin air. Like this guy that I was looking into in the backstory of Bob Levinson. Here's a man who was kidnapped off the island of Kish in the Persian Gulf in 2007.
Yeah.
He was kidnapped by the Iranian government. And we know this because that was in 2007, 2012, there's pictures of him in a prison in Tehran. And then subsequently the Iranian government denied ever holding him at all. But of US intel, we have that information, his family released that it looked like that it is highly probable that he died in captivity there. So we're aware that this goes on. We saw briefly a moment of Christians, 21 of them, who had every chance to renounce their faith in Jesus, and they refused. They put their faith in Jesus Christ above their own lives, and they were executed. They were decapitated. I mean, this is in the 21st century, and also, I mean, the film explores, you know, executions, honor kings in families here. Recently, one in July where a father chased down his own daughter and then beat her to death, then drank tea while waiting for the paramedics to arrive and the police. And I mean, it's ugly things to talk about, but you have to expose it in order to draw it out into the light. And so these human rights violations, how I look at it is if when my life is done and I could have done something, and some I'm not, well, I mentioned the Navy SEALs, I'm not a Navy SEAL, but I can't do what they do, but I can be an actor and I can do my part in exposing this stuff, and that we all should have rights, you know, inalienable rights, women's rights. We should all have a right to choice. And this is not a theocracy in our country where they stick a gun to your head and said, either believe this or die. You know, in this country, you get to choose what you want to believe in. And I believe that God would want it that way, because that's love, right? See, we're not forced to love him, but that's not the way it is in a lot of the world. And this little experiment, democracy, it's been around for a couple centuries. It's just really an experiment. When you think of the, if you go back into biblical times and you want to look up, you know, Pharaoh, if you want to look up what the Romans did, okay, with the, look at Pharaoh. I mean, the mass killings of children, and we get Moses, you know, they didn't get him. They mass killings, they tried to get Jesus. They didn't get him. Look at the mass killings of children now. These are human rights violations that are going on at different parts. Some people say, I'm not interested in this. I get it. You know, until they come for you.
Well, can you imagine that in the United States of America, we've been so blessed that we have gotten tremendously soft and self-centered. Netflix is airing effectively pedophilia for entertainment. We have all kinds of garbage being filmed. We know that people are making a lot of money off of it. And we're in a war for the lives of kids, for the lives of people around the world. So I just want to applaud you and your team, Cyrus in particular, for being willing to make a film on this subject. I cannot tell you how it gives me joy to know that there are folks like you in Hollywood doing what you're doing. Of course, we're all looking forward to the sequel of The Passion of the Christ. I know you're taking time out from writing that to do this interview, but you've got to know that a lot of people look to you as a hero in Hollywood, because there are not so many people who'd be willing to take the kind of roles that you do. This is heroic stuff. We're going to go to a break. I don't want you to respond to my praise. I know you'll blush. You're a humble man, but we're just so grateful for you. And again, for Cyrus, this film is coming out this weekend. Folks, you've just got to write it down and you've got to go. It's opening up all across the country, 1,500 theaters. That is a lot of theaters. Please check it out. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. Trying times. Just know they won't last. Trying times can be hard on our digestive tract. So why not try Life Change Tea at GetTheTea.com? Life Change Tea is an herbal blend of tea that helps the digestive tract and the colon cleanse from intruders. For years, people have experienced the benefits from Life Change Tea, and so can you. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. And for those of you that want to go a step further, we have non-GMO organic supplements. If you're listening to Eric, you're informed and educated. So how about free shipping? Just go to the checkout, find the coupon code, enter Eric, E-R-I-C, hit apply, and receive free shipping. Again, Eric, in the coupon code, hit apply, free shipping. These historic times will pass. The yuck in your gut will pass also with GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. GetTheTea.com.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with My Pillow. You may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to mypillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Hey there, folks. I have the privilege and honor of bringing to you my guest, Jim Caviezel. You know him from a number of films, probably principally from The Passion, which came out in 2004. It's amazing. Seems like yesterday. You've got to struggle, Jim, with this almost seems funny, but, you know, being typecast not only by Hollywood producers, but by people who associate you with that role. I mean, there are worse things, but that's just got to be a part of your life that you have had to come to make peace with, almost exactly the way Henry Winkler made peace with being known as the Fonz.
Well, I'll tell you, playing Jesus is a whole nother level than playing the Fonz. I can understand where you're going there. I'll tell you,
That was called a stupid joke. I was going no place with that. I was just trying to get you to smile. Go ahead.
I understand. The one thing is that when you go into a Middle Eastern country, you know, they might, most, a lot of celebrity movie star, they don't know, but they know who Jesus is. And that's a whole big thing when you go into other countries that don't even believe in your religion. There is a respect of Jesus. And even in Muslim countries. When I go into a film like this one, the execution of it is I'm into the artistry. In other words, there's a thriller aspect to this. This is right. Action. This is an action film. I don't go out and make religious films. This is just part of the story. And a lot of times when I go and see religious films or whatnot, they're preachy and they're crap. I mean, they really are. They're sentimental hogwash, a lot of them. And when I made the Passion of the Christ, you know, there was a great execution in the artistry of Mel Gibson, how he was going to tell the story. That's what I do when I go out and make it. If I see a movie like Ben-Hur, if I'm a non-believing person and I go and watch that, I'm absolutely moved by the story of, and I go back to the Roman soldier going up to Jesus and he asks him to come into his house. And Jesus says, "Take me with you." He said, no, I can't do that. I know if you say the word, my servant will be healed. And he turns to his apostles and he says, he has greater faith than you. So that's what I'm thinking about, that this guy was so powerful that he would impress a group of special forces, guys that are real, that don't even know who God is. And they're blown away with that. And so Jesus was absolutely authentic. So the stories that I'm looking for, and the execution, I'm looking for guys like Cyrus Norstedt, infidel, that when people go to the film, they're proud to be a Christian, that this is, that we can be a very big part of this game, and that we have the truth and the redemption is there. And really it's the execution of this story, but there's no sentimental hogwash. That's what makes this kind of film powerful. And it's a thrill ride. You're watching, and it's better than many, many thrillers that are in the theater in the last 10 years. A lot of them are crap. They just throw up green screen, and there's no art in that.
It's funny. I have to say, I mean, because I know you're Catholic, the one thing that I've noticed is that in Catholic theology, you all seem to have an ability to get the dark side and the, you know, chiaroscuro, to use an Italian term. And a lot of times more quote unquote evangelical films, you know, it's about wheat fields. It looks like a Chevy commercial sometimes. And Dostoevsky and anybody who really is dealing with Christian faith on any level, you see the darkness. It is, I have, long before I ever met you, I was praising the Passion of the Christ specifically for that, that Mel had the ability to tell the dark side of the story, to show the evilness of the evil so that the goodness of Jesus shines in a way that will not happen if you make a film that looks like, as I always joke, you know, I say a Chevy commercial. So I actually think that's very important to art in general, but that's my long way of saying congratulations to you and to yes, Cyrus in getting that.
I just want to say, I appreciate the compliment, but let me return it in this way. Michael W. Smith is one of my best friends, and that guy goes to the heart of the story as far as producing great, great music. Some people, when they look at it, like Randy Wallace, he's an evangelical. He knows whatever this that Christian heart is, which is going to be based in the Gospels, which is the fact that when you listen to the love of what Paul is speaking about in the Romans, let's say, but you know this guy is going to be executed, okay? And the fact that he could talk like that, there are plenty, trust me, there are plenty of Catholics out there that water it down. They like their happy Jesus too. What I'm looking for is a guy, and I play it to the fullest. This is a guy who is a evangelical who, despite his own teachings and whatnot, he's going to mix it up because he knows that what he read in the Gospels and what he read in the Bible is that these guys gave their lives for the Son of God. Peter denied him 3 times. Can you imagine going to the Romans and saying, turn me upside down? Yeah, baby. I mean, they turned him around.
People are not getting that reference. That is one of the most moving things I've ever heard. It's not in the scripture, but it's in our Christian tradition that Peter, when he was crucified, felt so unworthy of being crucified in the way that his Savior was crucified that he asked to be crucified upside down. That is something that will never fail to bring tears to my eyes. It's just an unbelievable moment of heroism and beauty.
He struggles through it through his entire life, you know, because obviously we know about the fishes, right? So he goes off and grabs all the fishes, and he grabs so many of them, and Jesus asks him 3 times. And when I was a kid, I just went, okay, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? But it was what's profound about it is in my heart, when I was praying deeply, I asked him 3 different ways. I knew as he's speaking through me. Now, this is my own interpretation. What you saw in the Passion of the Christ was an experience of where I don't want the world to see me, Jim Caviezel. Yeah. I want them to see Jesus Christ, the Son of God, or whatever he was up there, the God that we believe in. I all I can reference is the people that I know. Look, I'm a Catholic for a reason. I was raised that way. But
hey, hold on. We're going, because it's radio, going to heartbreak. Ugly interruption. My apologies. We'll be right back. I didn't care how
much they cried. Oh, look out. She came in through the bathroom window. Protected by a silver spoon.
Well, now she's such a Hey there, folks. Welcome back. As you know, we're talking to Jim Caviezel, but Jim just took a phone call from an angry Barbara Streisand who's been listening to this radio program. She takes issue with some of the comments that he just made, and I can tell you it wasn't pretty on the break. And so I said to him, why don't you go, you take care of Babs, because that's what we call her. Yeah. Her friends call her Babs. You take care of Barbara and, you know, calm her down. And why don't you come back in hour two? So in hour two, in a couple of minutes, we're going to be back with Jim Caviezel, and we'll continue the conversation with him. We'll probably just talk to him for the first 10 minutes, and then after that,
we're still hoping to get Bill O'Reilly, who is a hot under the collar, gigantic Irishman. And if he takes a swing at you, you're going down. Do you guys remember in The Godfather, you remember McCluskey?
Oh, yeah.
When he confronts Al Pacino and he says, stand him up.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And he takes a whack at him.
No.
That's Bill O'Reilly. He played that role. That was 1971, I guess. And he's still big and tough. He's a big, tough Irishman, and he's scary.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to try to get him.
He writes all those killing books, so you know he can't be that nice, you know?
You know.
By the way, Eric, I looked up that quote that you did in the opening of the show, the one about
silence,
you know,
in the face of evil is itself evil.
Yes.
Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. God will not hold us guiltless. People often quote Bonhoeffer. In fact, I used to say, oh, yeah, Bonhoeffer said that. I didn't quote it in my book because I couldn't find I couldn't find the source for it. And I thought, this is bizarre.
Yeah.
And then I realized that we simply don't know who said it. So I'm now saying people can attribute it to me.
Yes, but I won't
object.
But I Googled it, and it's W.C. Fields.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. He says that in the bank, Dick, in the first reel. That's so terrific. You know, Albin, you're a film historian. We all respect you as one of the great film historians of our time. And
Fun
I have
Facts
to say,
Fridays.
For you to be able to come up with that. What's that?
Fun Facts Fridays.
No, it's pretty incredible. Chris, are you not in awe of our friend Albin to know that W.C. Fields came up with that quote?
Yeah, that was amazing. I thought at first maybe it was Benny Hill because it kind of sounded like him. And he had a famous quote that I actually love. It's called Do Unto Others Then Run, which is...
That was a 70s TV show. There was a 70s T-shirt that said Do Unto Others Then Split.
Yes.
And I thought, man, you know, that's just beautiful.
Jim Caviezel, I heard, getting back to him, his movie Infidel, which is about, I guess, the 70s disco era and other sort of things. He is such a method actor that apparently that film left him with a chronic case of boogie fever, which
holy cow, you know. That's worse than dengue fever. But you know what they say? Chloroquine, the oxychloroquine, knocks it right out.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Fauci said that vitamin D and C are very good to take against that. But he doesn't want the public to know that because he's in favor of death. That's why Dr. Fauci, they call him Dr. Death. And I just got to say that it's important that we all understand boogie fever is something you need to take seriously. Man, I hope Caviezel can beat that. I didn't know that. Well, he's going to be back in the next segment after he talks with Streisand when she gets angry. But he's going to be back on for our opening 10 in just a couple of minutes. And then after that, we're going to try to get Bill O'Reilly. If we don't get Bill O'Reilly, I don't know what we're going to do. I think Adrian Barbeau is in the green room, and we'll see if we can talk to Adrian Barbeau. All right. So, folks, don't forget, if you go to mypillow.com, use the code ERIC or you'll be in big trouble. Please tell your friends. It's really the only code that's going to work for you and bring peace and democracy to the world. Use the code ERIC. Thank you. Yeah.